Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan present Point Taken, a podcast connecting you to the sports and pop culture issues you care about and the guests you want to hear more from. Now, here's Carolyn Cameron and Greg Brady.
Hey, welcome to episode 8 of Point Taken. Embarrassingly enough, we actually just had to count the amount of podcasts we've done on iTunes because I think we might have had 2 weeks where we said it was episode 6.
I can't believe that. That's like playing in so many Super Bowls. You're like, Tom Brady, how many Super Bowls have you played? I don't know,
it's
7 or 8 or 9.
Like that. It's just like that.
It's a lot like, yeah, probably nothing.
But this is 8. I can confirm that, and we are still learning to count to 10.
Well, you appeared by phone on one, so did we count that as so dreadfully unspecial that we counted it twice, or it was...
Sure, yeah, let's go with that.
Yeah, or is JD Bunkus doing the labeling, and he was on it, and
Yes. Pleased
he was on it. I got to do a couple morning shows with him later in the week, so he's
let's blame him
bouncing off the wall. So here we are. We got big news for a guest coming up in a few minutes. Nothing's an exclusive in 2017, but we're pretty pleased, aren't we?
We are very pleased to have Connor McDavid coming up, fresh off his Ted Lindsay Award and Hart Trophy just last week at the NHL Awards. Connor McDavid's going to be stopping by in just moments from now.
The youngest guest. I mean, we haven't had many 13, 14, 15, 16-year-olds on. So we're not really, you know, not that we're not. We want people to grow old with our podcast when we're doing it 15 years from now. Still weekly and still with no sponsors. We're working on that. But he is, yeah, he's not 20. He just turned 20. This past January.
It's incredible.
Yes, and to be a Hart Trophy winner and his first playoff experience, 2 rounds no less, and expectations out in Edmonton. They just signed Cam Russell back. No doubt they'll, we're taping this before free agency, but they'll attempt to make a splash, I'm sure.
Chris Russell.
What'd I say?
Cam.
Did I really? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay,
that's
Chris Russell. Coming, who signed the one-year deal and was a really, really late signing, and then bringing him back for a bunch more years. He was in Dallas the year before. Of course. Chris, not Cam.
It's okay. My last name's Cameron.
But many people don't get that confused.
That's true.
That's right. So, yeah, he's on Matt Devlin. Matt Devlin is on also. And he's, of course, Raptors broadcaster. Was doing the Blue Jays for about 7-8 games.
Yeah, that was fun. Yeah, when Buck took a little bit of a break.
Got a bit of a revolving door with the broadcast. It's 162 games, so it's neat to see the variety. And Matt can step in, and he does college football sometimes in the fall. Loves that. We might get 3 or 4 minutes of college. You might have to indulge both of us to talk like 3 or 4 minutes of college football because he loves it. I miss it a lot. I miss being able to talk it. And last year, I got to watch a lot more of it without a regular show. But I'll be limited this year because there'll be baseball pennant races and hockey starting, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I was going to say, we're getting to that time of year, too, where, I mean, now that the award shows are done, the NBA award show, the first ever, and NHL, soon it's just going to be baseball. And by soon, I mean right now.
Yeah.
And CFL, and there's soccer going on, but there's not a ton going on. You come from this high of the playoffs, and there's always tons of games every night and so many storylines, and then it really very quickly just...
Well, so here's what I can add. You're right. There's no Olympics this year. The Brazil Olympics were last year.
Mm-hmm.
The Euros soccer in France. So next year is a busier sports calendar.
Yes.
You got Winter Olympics in South Korea. You've got the World Cup in Russia, which will have a lot of intrigue, let alone for the soccer in the summer. But I'd ask you, before we have Connor McDavid on, about the Canadian Football League. Does it... So some say it's generational. Some certainly say, and demographics have kind of pointed this out, it's geographical. You are an Ontario-born human being.
Mm-hmm.
Does it resonate with you? Does it compel you? Does the Grey Cup's an event, and we all feel like we watch it, but do you have a sort of sliding scale for CFL interest? And does your peer group, the men and ladies you hang out with most, do you have a CFL diehard fan? Does it connect at all with you?
No, I have to say, as a Torontonian, it's none of my friends really pay much attention to the CFL or CFL fans. I did find living in Vancouver, more and more people were interested in the BC Lions. So I think it is both a generational sport, but it's also very much what else is going on in the city. And Toronto has so many things going on in the city and so many sporting events that it doesn't resonate.
It's hard to gain traction.
Yeah.
I mean, even Toronto FC's had a pretty diehard base. They've been around a decade. But I think the Raptors would tell you there have been low ebbs. When I first moved here in 07, they're an NBA team. I mean, there's 30 on the planet. It's the best on best league, and you'd still go, and it'd be two-thirds full on a Wednesday night in December or January. Yeah. But it really connected with me as a kid, and I loved growing up. I went to Iverwind Stadium. We'd go to Exhibition Stadium. That said, I think a radical new thought needs to take place, and what I would do is get it so far away from the NFL, it's not even funny. I'd start the season, to be honest, Carolyn, around March. I really would. As when the Super Bowl ended, I'd have a few weeks, because I still think even people in the States are kind of compelled by football. Now, they will not, this whole going head-to-head with the NFL thing, and I say this and I know people might hear the podcast in Winnipeg or Regina or Edmonton and go, this is typical Ontario thinking, mm-hmm. but
which
I'm trying
fair.
To think big picture, because you want the survival of all the league's not the same if all of a sudden, poof, there's not a team in Toronto. And I don't think that's close to happening. I went to BMO last year to a couple games. My kids wanted to go. We met friends there. We had a good time. And I'll go again this summer. But this head-to-head thing with the NFL, I think for people of my age, people a decade younger, closer to your age, it's a killer. It's a killer to play playoff games on Sundays. It's a killer to go even against college football on mm-hmm. Saturdays. So I think you got to get this season over with before baseball playoffs start. And that sounds ridiculous. Oh, my gosh. The Grey Cup is September 23rd. Where's the cold weather? Where's the Canadiana?
Yeah.
Where's the frozen field in Regina? But I don't know of another way. I do think you'd have the most eyeballs possible. And what someone would say, you're going up against Stanley Cup playoffs. Yes, but it's a different sport. You're not challenging the NFL weekend after weekend after weekend and wondering why you can't connect with a younger. You have to be the only football game in town, and I think that's the only way to go.
Yeah, but I think I don't think that's the biggest issue the CFL faces. I think right now what they're trying to do is make it cool, especially in Toronto, is make it cool and make it an event that young people and families want to go to, but they're just not there yet. I mean, in this city, and again, this is being a bit Toronto-centric, in this city, right now you can go to a TFC game, you can go to a Jays game, or you can go to a CFL game. Now there's the new rugby team in town too.
The Wolfpack.
And,
yeah.
And I've had more friends talk about that than they have the
CFL.
So
they've gone because it's fun. Yeah.
It's fun, it's cheap, and that's what people want to see. So the summer days of... they've hit, so.
I've always wanted there to be a WNBA team in the city.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
The market's big enough. There was a WNBA team in Tulsa, Oklahoma at one point. I mean, I don't want to play the we're Toronto card because we live here, but you could do that here, and I love the concept of fathers and mothers and older brothers and sisters taking and showing the best women on the planet play pro basketball and you know, mix in with the league and be part of the draft and buy t-shirts. I don't know why MLSE has never, I've never had a good answer, but I've never really asked the hard questions about why they haven't gone on board and sought this out as an entertainment thing. I want so that's the thing. People say, well, you don't talk very many Argos on your show, and somebody might write you guys and say, it's down too far in your lineup. You do give people what you wanted, what they want at a certain point,
mm-hmm.
and it's you do that delicate balance because you're a national, propping you up here, you're a national television host, and I'm a local radio guy. That makes it sound like I'm working in, like, Swift Current, which
is nice this time of year. No, but I see what you mean.
So if the Argos were, like, there's been a slight tick up in people wanting to talk TFC. It was a popular discussion point in hallways and on street corners and on subways in November and December when they were in the playoffs and before they played Seattle. But it takes getting there for that to happen.
Yeah. So now with the summer days here, and if you're looking for things to do, go check out a CFL game. Go check out an MLS game. Go do something different. Go check out the new rugby club.
You might see Carolyn at a CFL. Now, could you pledge to go to an Argos?
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
Yeah, and a Wolfpack game. Why are you smiling?
Because you said it didn't connect with you, but I would say there's a concession stand, so you will not be famished or thirsty.
I love popcorn. Yeah,
it's all
and
it takes.
Beer.
And as long as the sun's not in, I sat on the one unfortunate in one unfortunate spot where the sun was in my eyes for three entire quarters. It was 5 o'clock.
Oh, the hardships.
I know. Really rough gig
for
me.
The struggle is real.
It seems to be.
I don't know if Connor McDavid would be able to go to these games and eat all that beer and drink all that beer and eat all that popcorn.
The fitness, yeah, he's got to have a cheat day once in a while. Yeah. We're excited next to talk to the current holder. It's not a belt, but you do put the trophy in your basement someday. Hart Trophy winner, Connor McDavid.
Connor, you've had some time now to probably decompress after the trip to Vegas and the NHL awards. Are you kind of glad to have that all over? No more public speaking, at least not in the short term.
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind. I mean, Vegas was so much fun. To be recognized for some of those prestigious awards, it means a lot. And but I'm certainly happy. I can put it in the past, and nice to be back home and getting ready for next season.
Was there kind of a highlight to the whole trip to Vegas? Maybe even after the awards, when you got to celebrate with your family?
I think it might have just been afterwards. Yeah, just with my friends and family, and. Hanging out, had a nice dinner with them, and I got a chance to thank them for everything that they've done for me. Getting there, and kind of reflect on the season and everything. And it was actually my aunt's 50th birthday party as well, so that was a nice added bonus.
Connor McDavid's our guest. Amazingly fun to have the accomplishment at Edmonton of not just making the playoffs, Connor. You know how long it's been for the fans and for a lot of your teammates. But to win the round as well, it does feel like it'd be a harder summer, wouldn't it, if you didn't feel like that much progress hadn't been made?
For sure. I mean, you never want to feel like you're stuck in a rebuild. And I mean, I think for the fans, that's the feeling they had for a long time now. And, it's nice to kind of get out of that slump and have some good progress and have a good season as a team and do some damage and, kind of get the expectations and the hope up for next year.
Tell me about nerves. You don't strike me as a guy that looks in the rearview mirror and thinks, boy, that, I had the goosebumps. But first game in the NHL in the regular season last year or your first playoff game this year? Because everybody will tell you, from Wayne to Mario to Sidney Crosby, that intensity is not the same. Which were you more nervous for?
I would actually say my first NHL game. I mean, it's hard to replicate that kind of feeling, but... You know, you get a similar type of feel going into your first playoff game. The anxiousness, the fans, the intensity, the whole thing. It's very very fun to be a part of, and it's a dream come true to play in one.
So what's your day look like now in the off season? A typical day? Because you've trained with Gary Roberts. Some people call him Scary Gary because the training's so hard. So what's a day in the life of Connor like right now?
I get up and go to the gym around 7:30, you have breakfast there. That's part of Gary's program, and train for however long, and have lunch there, and come home. And I don't do too much other than that. Hang out with some buddies, golf here and there, and do some stuff on your own as well, some little training things on your own. And other than that, just try and relax and enjoy the summer and get ready for another long season.
Is there a workout that you have to do or that Gary Roberts has you do that you always just dread and you think, I don't want to do this?
For me, it's always just anything cardio. I think everyone can feel the same way about that. Certainly not fun, and I'm no different. It's something that I don't look forward to, but you have to do it, and you feel really good about yourself when it's done. So that side of it's good, I guess.
You got to wait till you're 35 in the league, and then the coach says, let's see you run 3 or 4 miles. I mean, Milan Lucic 10 years from now still wants to be playing in the league, and somebody will make him run. And he's going to roll his eyes and say no, right?
No, Lucic, I don't think is a good example for that. He's a hard worker, and
yeah.
He does anything the coach says. So there's certainly older guys around the league though that have deserved and earned a. Maybe a bypass here and there, some cardio stuff with the years of service.
Connor McDavid, our guest. I know we only got a couple more minutes with you, and you're on the run and on the move, as you will be a lot of the summer. Let me ask you about the breakthrough for your teammate, Leon Draisaitl. It was probably hard while you're experiencing it because it's such a routine. It's travel, fly to this game, practice, get ready for the game. But I don't know if you could – you're not watching the games, you're playing them. I sure you could feel him coming on, having a big playoff, seizing the moment. He had a very good regular season too, but we all sort of marveled at how he played against both San Jose and Anaheim, right?
Yeah. I think everyone can agree that he was our MVP in the playoffs, maybe other than Talbot. But, he was so good and it was such a treat to be able to play with him and be his teammate and his line mate. And I'm looking forward to getting back and playing with him.
You're going to be playing with Ryan Strome, too, this upcoming season. He was just acquired from the Islanders. And you're good friends with his brother, Dylan. And Ryan said right when the trade happened, he said that he's always been nice to you because he knew that something like this could happen. Are you excited to play with him? Has he been nice enough to you?
I'm really excited to play with him. You know, we're close family friends. My parents are very close with the Stromes, and you know, I'm very close with Dylan and in turn the family. And, you know, Ryan's always been a great guy to me whenever he was around the rink. Obviously, when I was a little bit younger in the NHL or playing in New York, when he was in the NHL and he'd come around, it was always you know, kind of cool. And to be able to play a team and be reunited with at least one Strome, it's fun.
Oilers Hart Trophy winner Connor McDavid, our guest on the Sportsnet Point Taken podcast. Your July 1st plans, or do you step away and find out about stuff like Taylor getting traded for Adam Larsson last year? Are you a guy that is really into the offseason moves, whether it's for another team or whether it's especially for your own? Or do you sort of, you got to take a breath once in a while? It's a long season. You got to let that stuff come to you. Or are you really intent on seeing who goes where, who signs where, who gets traded?
I think just the day and age we live in, you can't really get away from it. You know, and obviously when it's your teammate and your friend, you want to know even more. So, you know, I am very in tune of what's going on around the league and especially with the Oilers. So, I feel like everyone's in the same boat just with Instagram and Twitter these days. You can't even get away from it, even if you're trying to.
Connor, at the Vegas Awards, you were also named the cover boy for the NHL 18. So do you get that to you in advance then? Do you get to play the game before anyone else gets their hands on it?
I played a little bit in Vegas, actually. It was pretty fun. It's a fun new game. It's a little bit different than, I think, you know, what the games are, you know, they've become. And they've had some new skill stuff and dangles and whatnot. And it should be fun for the kids.
That's part of off-season training, right?
I'll count it, I guess.
Yeah.
Do you remember the first game you played? I weirdly have brought the list of cover people in front, so I'm a little older than you and would play like the NHL 95s, 96s in university. Do you remember getting a game with a specific cover and you're like, wow, this takes it to the next level?
It's tough to say, I think. Mm-hmm. You're obviously always paying attention to who's on the cover. It's always fun to kind of see who it is, and to be on the cover is very special.
Well, Connor, we really appreciate the time. Have fun on the ice. I think you just arrived at the rink, and have a great, great offseason, great summer.
Okay, thank you so much. Talk to you soon.
Bye. He's got places to go, people to see, you know? That's the life of the best player in hockey.
I mean, you think, okay, so it's one thing to drive to the gym. He was driving to the rink, mm-hmm. not to the gym. So that's not, like he said, get some, get a little cardio in. That is get on the ice,
yeah.
Which is remarkable. Like when you think the Stanley Cup final ended not even, you know, 21 days ago. And I found that interesting. I did find, we had tight time with him, but I found it interesting that he is... Some guys play the "I don't pay attention" and whatever happens happens. He's in on who the Oilers get, and
yeah,
he's
I like
watching.
That.
Obviously, would have noted the Flames got Travis Hamonic on the weekend. He would be really intrigued. I think some players are legit when they say their mind is so far away from the rink when they're not playing. And Connor's pretty active. 20 years old, wants teammates around him. Mm-hmm. They made some moves last year with the Lucic signing and adding Adam Larsson to the blue line with a cost. Sending Taylor Hart to New Jersey, but that's important to him.
I was impressed how he handled himself, too, at the NHL Awards. And I know he's used to doing interviews and used to being in front of a lot of people, but it's one thing to be on the ice and doing post-game interviews. It's another to be on stage receiving awards from Wayne Gretzky, from Ted Lindsay, and from being a true ambassador of the sport at 20 years old. And I thought he handled it quite well. He mentioned at one point at the awards that he was a little nervous doing all the public speaking, but he did a good job.
I would argue it was so much easier for players to escape and hide and have an off season. And I mean, Wayne Gretzky wasn't always the Wayne Gretzky we know now, who is remarkably mm-hmm. eloquent. And when you do, you know, if you're able to get Wayne Gretzky for an interview, he's going to give you quite a bit. And he's been there, done that. Not just the four teams, not just the ups and downs of an NHL career, not just coaching, not just putting together Team Canada a few different times for different for the Olympics and the World Cup. So it's so hard to picture Connor McDavid being that person someday because he's so in the moment of being 20, and we all were 20 at one point in time. But that's what makes him a pretty damn fascinating player.
And I get at this point right now with social media and the way that the league is, especially the NHL, you have to be careful what you say. Because one thing can be misconstrued, and the next thing you know, it is out in the media, and people are talking about it out of context. Not that we, the media,
I've had that happen to me, and it happens three times. I don't think you probably have. Have you ever said, honestly, during one of your television casts, have you ever had something where you're like, really want that back?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Really?
Yeah. Not like anything offensive or anything, but you just say, you know how
idle
it is, especially when it's live.
Yes, of course.
And you're thinking, what just came out of my mouth? That does not make sense.
Can you call
Let's
for a re-edit?
Nobody
can you have a mulligan?
Only
can
if
you take
it's really
another
bad.
T-shot?
Yeah, sometimes not. That's what this podcast is for. It's just, we can just talk.
A lot of winging it.
Just exactly.
Yes.
I can't even get the words out. Let's go to someone now who can, he can talk.
He can talk and he will
from
talk.
From one legend to another. How's that for a segue?
I think that's reasonable. I think he'd accept it, though there is no payment with it. And
no, of course
it does not do anything to further enhance his status as a Toronto play-by-play icon. That is Matt Devlin. Matt Devlin, who calls the Toronto Raptors games, both on Sportsnet and on TSN, all 82 games plus playoffs. And you just saw him with a good run of Blue Jays games on Sportsnet as well. He's kind enough to take some summer time. And you returned to Ontario probably to find your lawn waterlogged compared to what it's like with the dry heat in Arlington and Kansas City, Missouri, right?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was out there in Arlington where it was 30 degrees, but actually quite comfortable for Arlington this time of year. And then you head to Kansas City where it's, you know, 20, 25 degrees, very comfortable. And then you return home and there's a lot of water. I mean, yesterday there was just a lot of water out there, and it doesn't bode well for anybody that wants to go out and play some golf unless you're like Damien Cox, you can get it in before everybody else, you know, because you're out there at 5 a.m. in the morning, right?
Yeah, no kidding. Well put. When you have to switch over to doing baseball play-by-play as opposed to basketball, and there was some time in between, how far in advance do you have to really get yourself full into baseball mode?
Well, I always follow baseball. I started in baseball, spent nearly 7 years calling minor league baseball. And so you, from a studying standpoint, you know, it really starts when they head off to spring training. And, you know, clearly it's not that easy to manage two sports at once, but you try to do the very best that you can. Clearly there's going to be gaps. And, you know, when you arrive, you know, to the ballpark, I always, in years past and as well as this year, you know, always watch games, you know, leading up to the series that I'm going to do. But then also, you know, if the team, for instance, is at home as they were leading up to Texas, you know, I went to the game on Saturday, went to the game on Sunday, spent some time talking to people on Sunday. And then, you know, Pat Tabler and Joe Siddle and Jerry, you know, are so welcoming. The ability to sit down and talk with them to kind of fill me in, you know, and some of the things that I may have missed is always beneficial. And then it becomes just, and Greg knows this, when you're doing, you know, play-by-play, you know, you spend 2-3 hours a day before you get to the ballpark or before you get to the arena, reading everything you can, taking notes. I'm still kind of old school when it comes to that, where I'm, you know, writing things down. And you get to the ballpark, and then you start talking to people, and I think it's the access that you have there, you know, and it's the same thing with the Raptors that kind of separates things because it provides you, you know, a context of, you know, what's going on and where potentially, you know, you'll take the broadcast or where the game may go.
When you think of great play-by-play voices over the years, one of the most prominent is Vin Scully, who just retired at the end of last year's Dodgers season. And Scully was so famous for his storytelling because in baseball you have that time compared to, say, when you're calling a Raptors game, you have time to tell stories and you have to have the right timing. Is that what makes baseball maybe more fun and challenging?
Well, they're all challenging in different ways. You know, I think the speed of basketball and hockey, following the ball, following the puck, but then also understanding how abbreviated that time is to get a story in can be challenging. And football, as Greg knows, it's, you know, 25 seconds of chaos and 5 seconds of fill. And now even that has changed because of the no huddle. So before you would, you know, run a replay, you'd have a huddle. They, you know, you'd get back with them breaking to the line. Now that changes because certainly in college, you know, you have so much of what's happening, you know, up at the line of scrimmage. So the fill becomes that time as they're changing their play calls. As it relates to baseball, baseball is a storyteller's game. There's no question about that. The pace, Carolyn, as you know, it lends itself to that. And back in 1991-92, I was a sports anchor reporter in Abilene, Texas. And there was a show called Later with Bob Costas. And Bob Costas was interviewing Vin Scully. Mm. And they both said, if you want to be a great announcer, you need to be able to handle baseball because it's filling time. And not only filling time, but also understanding the value of telling a story. And it was really that conversation that led me into play-by-play, not knowing either one of them. I'm just sitting there in Abilene, Texas, watching, you know, kind of ready for the next challenge in life and, you know, realize that the $5 an hour I was making, you know, it wasn't like I was leaving a lot on the table. And so I ended up, you know, getting a job with the Springfield Cardinals, which at that time was in the Midwest League, single-A affiliate, the St. Louis Cardinals. And that ultimately, you know, propelled me to where I am today. On off days, I would drive in and Jack Buck was nice enough to allow me to sit in the back of the booth at KMOX Radio and listen to him. And that was a tremendous thrill because he's one of my all-time favorites from a baseball standpoint. So, you know, that kind of, you know, a little bit of my background with that. But, yes, it is it's a long road to get to ultimately your question. But, yeah, it is a storyteller's, you know, medium, and I think that's what makes it so fun.
Matt Devlin's joining us on the Sportsnet Point Taken podcast with Carolyn Cameron and Greg Brady. I could go on. Carolyn will throw something at me if I go on about how much I enjoyed the Later with Bob Costas 1:35 a.m. show, Matt. But it was amazing the depth he was able to demonstrate to people who just thought, well, there's a pretty-faced guy who does sports. Yeah. So many. Like, he'd have Paul McCartney in for, like, 3 straight episodes. I feel like we're talking about Ed Sullivan. Like, if our kids were listening, they'd be like, Jack Benny. But yeah. Costas was amazing around that era, wasn't he?
Well, he was. And, you know, it's funny because Later with Bob Costas, we did not show it at our NBC affiliate. I'd have to go back into master control to watch it.
What were they running, like Barney Miller or Gilligan's Island?
No, we were off the air.
Infomercial, like Tom Vu with a real estate seminar?
We were off the air, Greg. We were literally off the air. You had, like, you know, KRBC TV with, like, bars up there. We were off the air at 1:30 in the morning in Abilene, Texas. And I think they came back up on the air at, like, 5 in the morning with a morning show. But I would go back into master control, and I would watch Later with Bob Costas.
And just think, now avid fans of Sportsnet Central can watch Carolyn Cameron for nine hours every evening.
That's a lot.
It's
a lot.
At our house.
Yeah, of course.
We are really interested. Carolyn lived in Vancouver. I've traveled there enough, and you know the city too. So you're the very first play-by-play voice for the Memphis Grizzlies, right? You didn't replace anybody?
No, I did not.
So tell us about what that was like. There has to be some, I wouldn't say disorganization, but it's not easy being a startup. They'll realize that in Vegas in the NHL this year. There's been some flux, you know, with Charlotte, New Orleans, with different franchises moving. What were the first few moments? Like, you're in the NBA, so it's a lot of it's all new, though you'd done play-by-play before, but people were ready for, you know, a good chunk of losing those first couple of years. I've done an expansion OHL team, and it's hard, man. You know what's coming. Though you had Paul Gasol as a rookie, you know what's coming those first couple of seasons, don't you?
Well, you do. It's interesting. At the time, I was working for NBA TV as an anchor, and also doing Atlantic 10 basketball and ESPN football and basketball, just a lot of different things. And at the end of the day, and interestingly enough, I just signed on to do Friday night football games for ESPN, but I got a call from the NBA and they said, Vancouver is moving the team to, you know, Memphis, and your name has come up. And, you know, as a, you know, as, you know, somebody that, you know, got into doing play-by-play, 22 years of age, and, you know, really thought about it, you know, my wife and I were like, you know, this would be, you know, just a great opportunity to be a voice of a team, right? How cool is that? And so when I was offered the position, you know, we decided to go to Memphis. Two of my three sons were born in Memphis, Tennessee. We were living in New York City at the time. And it was a lot of fun. It really was. It was interesting because, to your point, it was new to everybody. And so much so that the first game we ever came on the air with Detroit Pistons, they had the Memphis Tigers against the Detroit Pistons. Now, the Memphis Tigers, of course, are University of Memphis, right? And so that was the one takeaway that I had from year one. But there were two people that were involved on the broadcast side that were just unbelievable. One was Randy Stevens, who came from Vancouver. In fact, Canadian that, to me, still a great friend. Talked to him yesterday. He's currently executive producer for Fox Sports Southeast. He handles the Atlanta Braves, the Hawks, the Hornets, the Grizzlies, as well as other teams, the Carolina Hurricanes, the Nashville Predators. He is originally from Vancouver, moved with the team in Memphis, was our producer, and was just exceptional at his job. And then another guy by the name of Mike Golub was there. He's now the president of the Portland Timbers, but he oversaw the broadcast department, and he was great. So we had a lot of fun. I worked with Hersey Hawkins, who had just retired, had never done television before. He's just a great man that currently works in the player development with the Portland Trail Blazers. The thing that changed it all was Jerry West and Hubie Brown.
Yeah.
And I could go on and on and on about the lessons that I learned. I did not miss a practice. Hubie was very welcoming. He would, you know, hey, come on the bus and go to practice with us, go to shoot around with us. And it was truly like a basketball clinic every single day. And then also what I learned from Jerry West was just, it was, you know, something that you can't get unless you're around somebody like that for the period of time that I was. With both of them, in fact. They're both, you know, Hall of Famers in their own right, and they both know the basketball, you know, the game of basketball so mm-hmm. well. So all that changed. I mean, here it is, a team that couldn't win anything, had never won more than 23 games. Hubie takes over. They win 28, and then the next year they win 50. They did get swept by San Antonio in the first round of the playoffs, but yet it was a magical run. Hubie getting coach of the year. That's truly when that fan base, you know, went to another level. And, you know, as we see today, you know, the House of Grind, you know, Memphis still has, you know, a great fan base. And, you know, it's really all started with Hubie Brown and Jerry West.
Fast forward to when you came north to call games for the Raptors. What was that adjustment like for you and your family personally, but also professionally taking over for Chuck Swirsky?
Well, I think, you know, number one, I was in Charlotte at the time, and it was interesting. Carl Scheer, who was a longtime NBA executive, we always used to have lunch, you know, like once a week and just talk about life and but also talk about the NBA. He had started in the ABA, worked with the Denver Nuggets, the Carolina Cougars. He was a general manager, hired Larry Brown. His play-by-play guy was Dick Stockton. I mean, there are just so many great things when you have access and have friendships with people that you admire so much that, you know, you sit down and you just learn so much about the game. He traded for Alex English, former Raptor assistant in Denver, which is a great story. But anyway, you know, we were talking and he said, hey, Chuck decided to go to Chicago. Would you be interested in the job in Toronto? And I said, you know what? You know, we love the city. We actually, my wife and I both have family here. in Toronto. My wife's originally from Chicago, the south side of Chicago, and I'm originally from New York, and, you know, went to PS 75, public school number 75, up until I was 10 when we started moving around the U.S. quite a bit because of my dad's job. And so it was a place that I always enjoyed going to, realized that it was, you know, a top North American market, but then also, you know, what a great organization and also just a great fan base. And Carl and I were talking on a Wednesday. On Thursday, Brian Colangelo, Chris Hebb, Tom Anselmi reached out. Friday, talked to him again. Sunday, I was on a plane from Charlotte up to Toronto. And we, you know, met on that Monday, got a tour of the city, sat down with, you know, Chris and Tom and also, you know, Brian Colangelo and Maurizio Gherardini at that time. And that really started the process and, you know, ultimately decided to make the move. It's been a phenomenal move. It's, you know, been 9 years. The adjustment, I was really fortunate, because Paul Graham, who's currently with the other network in Canada, the Three Letter Network.
It's okay. You can say it.
Yeah.
You're among friends. Yeah.
Yes, yes. Paul Graham was in his final year as a producer with the Toronto Raptors. And we also had Troy Clara, currently is the director for the Toronto Blue Jays. And Troy's one of the best directors I've ever worked with on the national and or local level. And then Paul Graham he's one of the best producers that I've ever worked with in my life. And the great thing about having Paul was this, that every game we would meet in the morning, have a coffee and just talk. But a lot of the conversations for me were about, would this work in this marketplace? It's a different marketplace. And he had the knowledge of having worked, you know, in this industry for, you know, at that time, you know, 30 years or what have you, 25 years. And because of that knowledge, I relied on him. And he was, you know, a great benefit to me. And what was also great about it was that, you know, I could ask him, you know, questions about, you know, all the great Canadian announcers that there have been. And we'd have long conversations about that. And, you know, the game would finish up. We'd get on the plane. We'd sit next to one another. And you know, we would, you know, have conversations about, you know, all the greats, you know, from here, you know, whether it be Danny Gallivan, whether it be Foster Hewitt, whether it's Dave Hodge or Chris Cuthbert or any of them, you know, Tom Cheek and Jerry Howarth. And just the list goes on and on. And so for me, as somebody that loves, and I'm passionate about my job, but I'm also, you know, somebody that respects those that have, you know, come before me. And so it was just a lot of fun for me because he was, you know, somebody like, you know, has become a great friend, but somebody that was able to provide me with just great insight. And that made year one a, you know, just a huge relief for me. And then also the combination of, you know, Leo Routens and Jack Armstrong, who I had known for years. I mean, Jack and I had worked together before. Leo I'd known for years. He'd been in the league since 1995, and they were very welcoming. And I think the combination of having Paul, having Troy, and then Jack and Leo really allowed me to kind of settle in.
Matt Devlin is our guest. That's a very familiar voice. Raptors back, obviously, in the fall. We'll get to a little on the team and what this year was and what it could be going into next year. You're so right about the broadcasting. And I'll tell you what, the stuff you end up trying to do the best you can, and you also realize, you know, somebody's replacing you and you're replacing somebody. So you never take stuff too personally. Like, I'm now, I guess, a broadcaster, and I can remember being angry when, say, an announcer would get replaced or a network would. I remember NBC lost baseball to CBS, and I'm like, oh, no. Like, I loved Vin Scully, and I loved Bob Costas. Who's this Sean McDonough character and, you know, calling the World Series? And people get very territorial, don't they? I mean, they are that with talk shows. I noticed that too. But they are very like that with play-by-play. I remember, Bo, you'd remember the story. Bo Schembechler took Ernie Harwell off the air, put Rick Riz and Bob Rathbun on, and it was chaos in Detroit for 2 years. And they fired Bo, the late Bo Schembechler, and they had to bring Ernie back. Like, it's amazing how into our play-by-play announcers we are, and you'd experience that, wouldn't you?
Well, for sure. I mean, look, you know, if you go back, whether I was in, you know, Memphis or, you know, then Charlotte and here and prior to that calling games in Springfield and Palm Springs and Lake Elsinore and New Haven, Connecticut, and all the different places and all the different teams that I announced for as you're kind of climbing up that ladder. You know, I think you have to be cognizant of the fact that, you know, you're just a piece in this big puzzle. And that, as you mentioned, there are those that went before and there'll be those that go after you. And you can't ever lose sight of that. And that's the same in anything. Look at the game, ultimately, whatever game it is, you know, whether it's soccer, whether it's baseball, basketball, football, hockey, the game is bigger than any one individual. Right. Mm-hmm. And so you're just a piece in all of it. And I think that for me, you know, coming here, it's just been an unbelievable relationship that has developed over time because, you know, Chuck had been here for 10 years and fans, you know, loved him and rightfully so. And so all of a sudden here comes a new voice. What is this guy about and who is he? And but at the end of the day, you know, it's been 9 years and I've been blessed to have those 9 years. And it's a place that, you know, my wife and three boys call home. It's the longest place I've ever lived in my life. And it's a place that we, you know, choose to live. We, you know, love it. Everybody thinks the season is over and I go home and this is home. Mm-hmm. I have a home here. I don't have a house anyplace else. We spend the majority of the summertime here. You know, typically, you know, in years past, we would, you know, head off for a couple of weeks or whatever to go see family. But, you know, we're here throughout the summertime. And so it's, you know, it's a great place. And, you know, ultimately you end up creating, and it does take time, a bond, right? A connection with your fan base. And I also understand that, that people, there's going to be people that like you and people that don't like you. And it's more immediate, as all three of us know today, because of social media and how they could reach out and tell you, right, that they like you or they don't like you, and that you can't take it personal. I try not to. I've been around now for a long time. You can't be sensitive to, you know, the way certain people, you know, view your broadcasts. You try to do the best that you can. I don't think that people realize how often you really think about it. If you love it and you're passionate about it, the Raptor game is over. And, you know, the next morning after I drop my kids off, you know, I'm rewatching a game and I'm rewatching the game just, you know, from the standpoint of, you know, is there something I said that maybe I could say it a different way? Is there something that we're missing? Is there something I could do better? It's the same thing with stepping into the Blue Jays booth. You know, I just wrapped up game 7 of 7 straight and, you know, I feel like comfortable now, right? After mm-hmm. 7 straight, because as we were talking about earlier, there is a different pace and a tempo to it.
Sure.
So, you know, but in today's day and age, as all three of us know, you know, you're going to get that immediate kind of feedback and response, and some people will like you and some people won't. And guess what? That's okay. You know, it's okay that there's some people that don't. And there's, you know, it's great when people do say, you know, hey, we appreciate what you do. And I'm very thankful for that.
I always figure as long as you as the individual know that you can do better and what you can do better, that's all that should really matter. So the Raptors right now, they're trying to get better, as are all the teams right now in the East and West. Matt, is it as black and white in that everyone needs to try and keep up with Golden State and the Cavs, especially heading into this season, not knowing where LeBron's going next summer? Or should GMs, kind of like the 76ers are doing right now, be looking more into the future once LeBron and the Cavs and Steph and the Warriors have slowed down?
You know, Carolyn, it's interesting because I think this could be said maybe even with the Jays, with a little bit of a caveat, right? A little bit of a change where, you know, how soon we all forget, how soon we all forget the years that a team was out of the postseason. And all it takes is the second round matchup against Cleveland to get swept, and you all of a sudden think you need to maybe make a massive adjustment and or change. You know, it's an organization, as we all know, we followed this team from 1995 on to today from the standpoint, if you followed the NBA, that made it to the Eastern Conference Finals after getting swept by, you know, the Washington Wizards. They've advanced to the playoffs, you know, four consecutive years for the first time ever. And we also understand how great Golden State is. But you know what? If you look at the game of basketball, there, and it's not just basketball. Think about how the folks, you know, around the NHL feel with Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, and how great those two have been, and Murray, obviously, in net. But when you have great players that come together, it's extremely difficult to beat them. And Golden State, everybody talked about the big three. They got the big four. And so it's extremely difficult to beat that team in a seven-game series. A one-off, you know, maybe you have a shot, maybe. But seven games is tough. And so how does that relate to, you know, the Toronto Raptors? You know, look, it's ultimately for them, I think they went out and did this past year exactly what they were supposed to do, which was make a deal that would get you better. Unfortunately, after Masai Ujiri made two great deals, bringing in Ibaka, bringing in P.J. Tucker, Kyle Lowry goes down with a right wrist injury that ultimately led to surgery. And so you never saw that team collectively. And then at the end of, you know, the second round matchup against Cleveland, Kyle doesn't play for two. Now, we could get into a debate as to, okay, a healthy Raptor team, how far would you get? I would say this, that the regular season seeding in the NBA, maybe unlike the NHL, and it matters from this. Maybe it's, you know, it brings you to a level where you can avoid certain teams through the first two rounds, and you get that matchup in, you know, the Eastern Conference Finals or the Western Conference Finals. I think the Raptors this past year missed out on that. I think they, there were some games out there that, you know, they, looking back on, maybe could have managed a little bit differently and ultimately had come away with a win where maybe now you reach Eastern Conference Finals for the second year in a row and maybe people would have a different conversation about where they are right now. But Cleveland and Golden State are clearly the two best teams. Does that mean that everybody just kind of says, okay, that's it, you know, we're going to go in a different direction? No, I think that, you know, people are going to, you know, kind of hunker down and figure out exactly what they need to do with respect to adjustments. And that adjustments also means player personnel and what they need to do to compete. And so it's going to be an interesting summer. There's no question about that.
Yeah, I never buy that people get like this in the NHL too. Well, one team wins the trade deadline and one team wins the cup and 29 teams have quote-unquote disappointing seasons. We had Connor McDavid on earlier. You win the first round in Edmonton that anyone's run in 11 years and you play 13 playoff games. That's success. Now, what it is next year, it's judged a little differently. I was adding it up. 13 teams, Matt, in the last five seasons haven't won, of 13 franchises haven't won a playoff round. And there's only eight teams that win every year. So that's a lot of teams in a half decade that haven't either, that either haven't made the playoffs, like the Milwaukee or the Minnesotas and the Sacramentos, or they haven't won a playoff round. And you nailed it. The Phoenixes and the Orlandos, they're kind of trying to, you know, to going through rough times for 240, 320 game stretches. And if the lottery ball doesn't come up or it's the wrong year to get a top three pick, you're still going to be there. There's no guarantees.
Well, you're exactly right. I mean, you know, think back to Brian Burke and what he said about the Pittsburgh way, right? What is the Pittsburgh way? Get lucky.
That's right.
And I remember Greg Popovich when I was doing, you know, TNT playoff games. And it was just, you know, what's great about that is that you get to walk in and you have access to the coaches, you know, a couple hours before the game, and you could have a conversation with them, which then led to a conversation about, you know, where they are as a franchise. And he said, look, you have to be lucky enough to get the first overall pick in a year in which has truly a number one player. And he goes, we were lucky enough to get it twice, in David Robinson and Tim Duncan. And so, you know, look at the acceleration of the Toronto Maple Leafs. You know, they were extremely fortunate to get Austin Matthews, who appears to be a generational talent. Look at Edmonton, right? For all those years they're down, they get Connor, and then they're at the next level. And then let's talk about Buffalo. How does Buffalo feel, right? So, you know, it's you know, sometimes, you know, the quick response of, hey, you got to change, you got to go in a different direction, you got to strip it down, you got to start over. You know, luck has to be a little bit on your side here. And there's nothing wrong with being a 50-plus win team year in and year out, and, you know, getting after it. And, you know, quite possibly, depending upon circumstances, you know, make an unbelievable run. I do think that you have to look back to, you know, we've talked about this before, the 2004 Detroit Pistons. They're an outlier, but I think for a lot of teams, it's something that you look at. And I think that, you know, Toronto, in a way, this past year, by getting Serge and PJ, and if you had a healthy Kyle and DeMar, that it was a team that was, you know, kind of ready to make a run. But unfortunately, they ran out of time.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens this summer, and then especially next season, and then if and when LeBron does decide to stay or leave Cleveland.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that to me is going to be the really interesting piece,
yeah.
Because here we are once again in something that I never thought we'd have a conversation about, quite possibly LeBron leaving again. But this time, it is not going to be on LeBron. This one, I think, is going to have more to do with the owner, who has seemed to forgot about the years in which he didn't have LeBron. So it's really interesting to me. I mean, this is a team, Cleveland, that didn't win one game this year when LeBron didn't play. It's an organization that didn't even win 100 games combined in the 4 years he wasn't there. So if I'm Dan Gilbert, I give LeBron everything he wants, and I go out and get the players that you need to have. But instead, what has he done? You know, it's been a lot of coaches through there. It's been a lot of GMs through there. It's just really interesting, and I think it could quite possibly set up LeBron leaving, and I think if he does, it changes things once again. And if he does leave, I think the fans are going to be upset, but I think when he leaves, and if he does leave, it's going to be looking back, and it's not going to be on him. Instead, it's going to be on Dan Gilbert.
Ugh, what a PR nightmare that would be. Well, Matt, we really appreciate your time. Enjoy the rest of your summer, and we can't wait to hear you on more Jays broadcasts. The next ones are in August, were you saying?
Or July.
July.
Yeah, July. I'm going to be in Detroit, Greg's old stomping grounds, for the 14th, 15th, and 16th, right after the All-Star break. So
nice.
I'll be there, which will be fun. And then after that, it's... you know, just a couple of weeks in July of relaxing.
I hear
and hopefully there'll be no rain. I can play a little golf.
Yeah, you don't want a two-hour rain delay at Comerica Park. Ugh. Also, I hope the Tigers should be in full-on sell mode, Matt. Can you bring back J.D. Martinez or Justin Verlander on the team? I feel like you'd have to give up something for that, but bring them back for the August and September run.
Well, there's no doubt that if there is one team that's going to be full on sell mode, it certainly appears that that's going to be the case, right?
It should be.
Yeah.
It should be that. And do you go to Vegas for summer league, or do you not do this?
You know what? I'm not this year.
Good. Well, it's 47 degrees there every day. We want you back and well rested and not fried.
I was already thinking about going, but then I have a family commitment the week before I do the Blue Jays, and there was an overlap, and I just could not make it out to Vegas. But I always enjoy it. If fans haven't had the opportunity, I know it's hot out there in the summer. You wouldn't know it because it's jam-packed. The place is jam-packed all the time, Vegas. But it's a lot of fun. Summer League is a lot of fun, and I think this year it's going to be exceptional based upon, you know, the draft. and the players that are there. So if you ever get a chance to get out to the Vegas Summer League, it's always fun.
I've never gone. I really want to go.
It'd be a great time to go. Yeah, not in the summer, not in the winter, but the summer. And also when we get the schedule out, I know the schedule starts earlier this year. Carolyn's a huge LeVar Ball fan,
so we want to
see him. Now we don't know if it'll be a Jack game or a Leo game, but I'm sure he might be able to elbow his way in for a quarter of analysis.
He'll take
we want to be there when that happens. Yeah.
Well, you know what? You would think that he would be able to. I mean, he's appearing in a WWE now and everything else. So, you know, Carolyn, you're not a fan, is that what we're saying?
No, I'm not. Not the biggest fan. No.
No.
For being honest. It's just a lot. It's a lot in your face.
Wait until kids are in her life, Matt, and she just wants to promote them and prop them up and drive them with discipline and then show them off. It's a matter of time. Make money off them.
Yeah.
Hey, look at the one thing. He's gotten himself an immense amount of publicity.
I know. You're right.
For his son, I don't think it really matters. He was going number two anyway. But he's certainly put himself in another realm. And so he's got two other sons that, you know, he obviously feels as though, you know, he wants to promote. But I have a feeling, as we all do, that, you know, most people like to see your performance kind of do the most speaking. But he's had fun. There's no doubt about it that LeVar has had a ball, literally.
Hey!
has had a ball, you know, with all this publicity. Well, he's having a great time.
He is.
We've had fun having, and I hope you enjoyed This Is Your Life, Matt Devlin. It could have gone on next time you do it in a couple years. It'll be even
Part
longer.
Two.
Yeah,
Part
exactly.
Two. We can add to it.
Yeah, the dark moments. We'll get into more of those A-ball games and those Memphis losing streaks. We'll do that. Enjoy it, Matt. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me. See
you.
Got it. All right. All the best.
That was awesome, having Matt Devlin and Connor McDavid on.
He was, to quote Randy Carlyle, just okay. No, Matt was... It's good having him. A lot of prep for. I think he will be very excited for Raptors. And as we all were saying, no sense. We don't have a sense right now. Now, by the time someone could listen to this on July 7th and have a really good sense about free agency, and Paul George could be out of the Eastern Conference like Jimmy Butler is, a million things could happen.
Oh my.
But it's a really, really important off season. And I believe, again, the Raptors, although we didn't ask Matt this, go out to Vancouver to start training camp, which is a fun thing.
It is a fun thing. Yeah, Rogers Arena sells out really quickly every single year they've been out there, so...
Nobody hates them for not being the Grizzlies, which I think was most unfortunate, the move to Memphis.
Oh, no but kidding.
I didn't live... I had
just
a lot of friends out there who went to games... So they said, went to games all the time in Vancouver, but the team didn't win, and there weren't enough of those people.
No, not enough support for the team. I mean, fan base there was, but just within the team, it just was set up to...
Well, you do have to win. Like I always say, if the Ottawa Senators had not made the playoffs 11 years in a row... Given the location of the arena, you just don't know. You hope it would survive. I mean, you know, you got to give your fans something back eventually. The Winnipeg Jets the honeymoon's over. People, they're not going to like watching Edmonton, because we had Connor McDavid on earlier, and Calgary now with their big moves and attempts to shore up their blue line.
Yeah.
You can't see all the Western teams have all the success and you not be part of it.
Nope. Okay, we're going to give back to our listeners right now with my favorite segment. What's up with that?
It's rather charitable that we do this. People might want the whole podcast to be just this someday.
Perhaps. It'll evolve.
Where do we start?
Okay, well, on Monday night on WWE Raw, LeVar Ball, you know, father of Lonzo and the rest of them and the head of Big Baller Brand.
The rest.
Yeah, he was on WWE Raw. And my question is he an annoying helicopter parent or a marketing genius? Because he was just at his most obnoxious on Monday evening, running out into the ring.
That's his place. I mean, he took... it's one thing to say, when's the last time you really knew of a dad who wasn't already a famous athlete? Like, you always hear about... Kid, you know, parents and their kids getting drafted. Ray Ferraro's kid plays in the NHL. Obviously, Del Curry and Steph Curry and Seth. This is but you don't see those dads in WWE rings with their shirts on. Not that I'm aware.
I mean,
of.
It
I
was
think
warm
Archie,
in
I
there.
I never saw Archie Manning step into a wrestling ring and take his shirt off and threaten the, I guess, the Intercontinental Champion. I was told the guy's name that he threatened, Carolyn, was The Miz, and I got it confused with the musical Les Mis on the morning show.
I think it's different.
Yeah. My mom knows Les Mis. She doesn't know The Miz.
Yeah,
but they're
I
almost
only know
the same
one
thing if you translate the language. I want to point that
but
out.
But you know what? For as obnoxious and irritating as you may find him and I may find him, he's getting his job done. He is everywhere, and look at us right now talking about him a little bit more and getting more plugs in for his brand. That's where I'm saying, marketing-wise, he knows what he's doing.
The equally good question is, could the kid put a stop to it? Or maybe, because is Lonzo out there saying, Dad, do what you gotta do? You brought me here. You could share in this stardom. And I think he's got to tidy it up a little bit. Like, he had kind of an ugly situation with Christine Leahy on Fox Sports Radio. The arrogance and obnoxiousness does go a little far, but yet we haven't turned it off yet. We haven't gotten tired of, and we get tired of things so fast in our society. We're like fidget spinners, done with that.
Ugh.
Thank you.
Never.
Exactly. They're almost all the way out of my house. I'm
and
very
that,
proud.
That Father's Day Foot Locker commercial too, where Lonzo was talking about his dad being a helicopter parent, was genius. It made them likable.
But that's what I mean. He's the kid's in on the joke.
Oh, I know. And that's where I'm saying they know what they're doing.
I'll never question a parent who's done, I mean, if you're 3 for 3 and you and Mrs. Ball are getting all 3 of your kids college scholarships, that's like writing yourself a check for like $800,000 to go to UCLA and play basket, let alone what you're making in pro basketball. Man, yeah, you've done your job.
I would just be so embarrassed.
Do you actually want to see him wrestle? Like, if I told you he was actually a wrestler.
This is what's awful. I do not like him, and yet I can't look away. It's like a car wreck. I can't look away.
He'll be in some of your favorite movies soon.
Oh, I hope not.
He'll be in Trainwreck 2. He'll be LeBron instead.
He will be
the Trainwreck. He basically thinks he can play with LeBron and Michael Jordan.
Actually, I would watch that movie. Okay, John McEnroe, let me just say this, but he's trying to get some publicity out there for a new book that's coming out. But he said that if Serena Williams was playing on the men's tour, she'd be ranked something like 700th in the world. And Serena, she tweeted back and basically said, John, I like you, but please keep my name out of your mouth. Do not talk about me.
And what was the biggest reason? She's also pregnant, and she's like, leave me alone, I'm pregnant.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking that should not interfere with your Lamaze classes. Your 2 tweets shouldn't interfere with getting a nursery ready and all the stuff that Serena probably feels like she needs to do to prepare for this small momentous, and it is, monumental occasion.
But my question is this just clickbait, or is John McEnroe, is he looking for trouble, and does he really think this is true?
This was my interpretation, and I do think the interviewer of McEnroe, like, you, have you seen the transcripts of the original NPR interview?
Yes.
So... He says the interviewer says, let's talk about Serena Williams, okay? Mm-hmm. And he says, sure, why not? Let's talk about Serena Williams, best female player ever. The interviewer then says, well, why do we have to qualify it? Wouldn't we say she's the best player in the world? Well, she's not. And you know she's not, and I know she's not. And I feel like McEnroe got painted into a little bit of a corner. Could he have been more diplomatic? Sure, but it's 58-year-old John McEnroe. Look at he just, you probably saw the video tweet. He destroyed Margaret Court for being so, you know, discriminatory and homophobic about same-sex marriage in Australia. So John McEnroe's going to say what's on his mind. I think 700's a little low, but I mean, how are we? I don't know how we're qualifying and quantifying.
Well,
this.
We can't. That's the issue. And the thing that Serena said too is it's not based on facts, whether or not that works for or against her. And that's why I'm saying this is just clickbait, where it's the reporter was asking the questions, trying to get something. McEnroe likes to say stuff to get attention. I'm not buying any of it anyway.
Well, here's what I'd say. I'm a women's sports fan.
As is McEnroe, though.
He's
always been for equal pay. He has done a ton for
the
women's sport.
Well, I haven't, but he has. I talk about it. I'm not sure I've done a lot for the women's game. I've lost to a lot of women in my past, including in high school. But I think we're in this age where we want to compare things and everything to everything. Like, we can't even... And part of that's our job. So, hey, is LeBron James better than Michael Jordan? I don't know, but it gets exhausting. I think so, but it gets exhausting after a while,
What's
making your arguments. And men and women can be like that. Like, I think I think there's, you know, you could watch a women's college basketball game and I can enjoy it. And the worst thing someone could do is at the end of the game, you know, they would have lost to a high school boys team by 40. I don't care. I watch that for the pure entertainment value of it. But I do think there's a push on the side of women to equalize things. When, why can't we just say it stands on its own as a great entertainment product, women's tennis does. At times, it's been way more interesting than the men's tour. You know I've told you that.
Yeah.
I've when the Williams were rolling and the Belgians were there and Capriati's playing and Davenport's playing, it was a better tour than the ATP 15 years ago. It's not now. Would you concur with that? It hasn't been for a while.
Yes, agreed. And whether or not Serena would be ranked 700 or whatever she could be ranked if she did play on the men's tour, I will say this right now. I think she would beat up on John McEnroe on the court with her power. I don't think he'd be able to
keep up. But again,
and
McEnroe's not saying he'd beat her
I know.
And I think people are getting that confused. He's not beating her at age 58.
And whether men or women, doesn't matter. Serena Williams has done a ton for the sport of tennis, no matter who you are.
Yeah, so I think it's unfortunate I think the interviewer painted McEnroe in a corner. But then I saw him on CBS this morning, and they're like, care to apologize?
Oh,
and he's like,
not going
to
apologize.
I mean, but no, like, why?
Yeah.
Why should he? And now we're getting in, and then he gets asked, well, what would you be ranked on the men's tour? And I'm like, here we go.
Yeah.
Like, again, they don't need to be.
It's like a runaway train.
Yeah, they don't need to be, and they don't need to be compared. But the NPR interviewer suggesting Serena's going to walk out. I mean, she said on Letterman she'd lose to Andy Murray in about 12 minutes. And that even shouldn't, who cares?
I don't care
Andy
either.
Andy Murray doesn't care.
Okay, last one really quickly.
Let's get emotional with tennis.
One man spent 2,000 straight days at Disneyland. How long would you last?
My heavens. Yeah, I saw that. And he's continuing to go year after year. He went on New Year's Day
after
2012.
Day.
And now he works again. He was unemployed and he thought, this would be a good way to kill the time.
But
on
he goes
my,
on evenings now.
But yes, he's working and he goes, the Disneyland spokesman, I read his quote, he said it helps him decompress at the end of the day. I'm not decompressed when I'm at SeaWorld.
No, I'm very stressed.
Oh, my gosh.
Disneyland, Disney World is great. I'd actually love to go back as an adult. I went as a kid during the Lion King craze, and I was at that age where it was just the greatest trip of my life. But you could not pay me to spend more than probably 5 days.
Well,
I love Disney.
Do you just like walking around, or are you a ride person
I don't like rides. I'll be sick and dizzy.
Good heavens. You'd be fine. You can't just walk up and down and play the Midway games with the shoot the water and the frogs.
No, but you know the teacup one where you just go, you just spin and spin.
The 9-year-olds do not want you taking up line space going on the teacups in front of them. They got things to do, meltdowns to have after lunchtime.
Right. Well, you're going on vacation, not to Disney World or Disneyland.
No, just to swim, to run around, canoe, to hang out. We're going to drive
to fitness competitions with your family.
Some push-up competitions. We're going to drive to Detroit from Grand Bend, a bunch of us, and see the Giants-Tigers game next Wednesday. I'll be there if anyone wants to say hi.
Nice. Well, enjoy your break. We're going to take a break off from the podcast, too, for a week, because I still haven't learned how to use that board in front of you, how to work everything.
But you're getting so much closer.
Right.
By watching what I do every week.
Yeah.
To mess it up.
That's what I meant.
Well, what a show. Great to have Matt Devlin on. Great to have Connor McDavid in his Hart Trophy second season. That was great. It was great. It was all just great.
Oh,
really,
just,
really fantastic.
It was great. I'm glad you said so.
More specifically, great.
You were great, too.
Thank you. Enjoy the week off. We'll see everyone, listeners included, next week.
Bye.
You've been listening to Point Taken with Carolyn Cameron and Greg Brady on sportsnet.ca/590.